the folks that are using it as well. Sometimes different systems and technology is never perfect, so hopefully everyone is connected and able to access the system one way or another. Just as a reminder, we do have closed captioning, I mean real-time captioning going on the simultaneously with this session. For those not familiar with it, just click on the closed captioning icon in the lower right-hand box or corner of the screen, and that will open up the captioning for you. And you'll be able to view the captioning in real time and resize that box and customize it for your own view. Thank you, and we'll begin in a few minutes, letting a few more folks go ahead and sign into the system. We had a very high registration on this particular session, so still expecting a lot more folks. Thanks. And just to reference some of the comments that have been made, someone indicated that they're working fine with Firefox 3.6. Some of you may know from our instructions that we recommend the use of Internet Explorer. That's because the developer of the program has told us that it's optimized for operation in Internet Explorer. However, we do find that it does work for many people okay in Firefox. So thanks for verifying that you're working okay in Firefox. That's correct. You should see the welcoming slide. That's all we have showing right now. We have not started the session, and we're getting to that point where we're going to start in a minute or so. Again, I'm just letting a few more people sign in at the bottom of the hour before I start, but we'll let you know when that happens. Great to know that we have a Safari user and it's working well for you. Sometimes we have people who have experienced problems using Mac software and systems, but I'm glad that it's working well for you. Thank you. If people are watching the participant numbers, you see a lot of people are signing in here at the bottom of the hour, so the numbers are going up. I'm just going to give it a few more minutes, probably start at around 35 after the hour. Just don't want to lose much time, but I do want to make sure we get folks into the system. This is always the struggle when you're using technology and making sure people are signed in. I appreciate all of you that were signed in before the bottom of the hour. Thank you.
This is Tim. Should I add 5 minutes on to the end, or are we just subtracting 5 minutes from the presentation? Over.
Tim, I think it's an issue that we're scheduled to go to the, you know, the 4 o'clock time period, so people may have to drop off. We'll see what we can do. It's just that I am hesitant to just start up with when we have so many people signing in because we may experience some technical problems with that. So I'm just trying to give another second or so, but we'll start in another minute or so we don't lose too much time. Someone has indicated that they were having trouble working or getting the captioning. It is working fine, so it may be something on your end that is blocking you. I'm not quite sure what that is, but it is. The captioning is working. If you double-click on the icon, it will open up another box, so make sure that you're looking at your tray to see that you've got another box. It would be HTTP :// stream text that may appear at the bottom. Open that up if it did not open up and pop up on your screen. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start, and as part of that starting, I'm going to give direction to the folks that are recording the session on our behalf that we are going to begin to record. And Tim, I'm going to ask you to one more time, please push the slides so that we can initiate the recording and make sure that the slides are captioning everything. So I think we're ready to go. And if you would advance the slide, Tim. Great, thank you. Welcome everyone to the Accessibility Online webinar series. This is a collaborative which is coordinated by the DivTech Great Lakes ADA Center, and we are serving Region 5 of the United States on behalf of the National ADA National Network and the U.S. Access Board. Our session today is Section 508 and Telecommunication Act Refreshed. Our speakers will introduce themselves in a moment. Just want to give people some instructions on what's happening today. Again, I've been giving instructions about the captioning option. The lower right-hand corner, there is a icon for CC or the captioning icon, international symbol. If you click on that, it will open up a captioning box, and you'll be able to follow along with the captioning. We are going to be taking some questions during the session. People were asked or given the opportunity to submit questions in advance. Our speakers will be addressing those questions that were submitted in advance as part of the entire program. And so you should hear your question be introduced at that time. We are going to be closing out the chat area so that we don't have any interference in the system during the period of time when our presenters are presenting. When we're ready to take questions, we'll open the chat area up, and that is where you'll be able to type in your questions that you would like our speakers to introduce to you today. So at this time, in addition, just as a FYI, you will receive a copy of the PowerPoint presentation that is being presented today, along with a link to a survey at the very end of the session. So within a few minutes at the close of the session, you'll receive an email to the email you registered for that will contain those materials for you. At this time, I am going to go ahead and turn over the session to Neil Millick, who is a public member of the U.S. Access Board. Go ahead, Neil.
Thank you, Robin. Welcome, everybody, to our Section 508 and Telecommunications Act Refresh webinar. We are calling it, and what we've made it with that long name, we're calling it the Information and Communications Technology, ICT, Guidelines and Standards. Well, I'll go ahead and introduce myself, and then I'll ask my fellow moderators to introduce themselves. My name is Neil Millick. I am a public member of the U.S. Access Board, and I'm from Florida. I am an individual who is blind, and I use assistive technology, and so the ICT stuff that I'm involved with is very important to me. In fact, I'm using my Zoom text in collaboration with this program, and everything's working fine. I can hear, and then my assistive technology and reader are working in coordination. So I also, as a public board member, sat as the co-chair of the ICT ad hoc committee. At this time, I'll turn it over to Ron, who will introduce himself.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Gardner. I'm also a public board member, and it's a pleasure for me to be here today. I serve as co-chair of the ICT committee, and I can tell you that our ad hoc committee has worked hard with the staff of the United States Access Board to work on the materials that you're going to hear about and learn about today. I happen to be an attorney, but I don't want that to set anybody off because I don't come to this as an expert either in 508 or in technology. I happen to be blind, and I also happen to be hearing impaired. And like Neil, I can tell you that the assistive technology working with this webinar is just amazing to me. I always am aware when it doesn't work. And it's really nice to be part of technology when it does work. And so far, it's wonderful to be using the screen reader. I happen to be using JAWS from HumanWare. No, it's from Freedom Scientific. Man, did I just blow that. Well, I got them both advertised there. Anyway, I'm using JAWS, and I'm also using some hearing assistive listening technology along with the seminar today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tim Cregan, who is a senior staff member here at the United States Access Board.
Thank you, Ron. My name is Tim Cregan. I'm an Access Board staff member here at the Access Board. I'm a senior accessibility specialist. I was the designated federal officer for the advisory committee that developed the report from which this draft text and ANPRM are directed, and I'm the current staff lead on the 508 Refresh. I'm happy to be here with all of you today. Thank you.
Well, as we get, I'll get back right now. Again, this is Neil Millick. Welcome. I'm glad to see that we have so many participants on the webinar today. Let me briefly go through our agenda for today. We'll start with a brief introduction of the ICT, and then we'll go into the history of the ICT refresh process as well as the timeline. And then we'll go through the draft text and the advance notice of public rulemaking overview. And then during that process, hopefully we'll have time in the middle to open it up to some questions. And then again, we'll have questions and answers at the end of our presentation. Let me go through the introduction right now. Maybe many of you wonder why the refresh is Section 508 and 255. I've been a building official the majority of my working career, and I dealt with building codes. Codes were updated based on new technology, new construction methods, and storms that come in. There was a need to constantly review and update the codes for construction in the built environment. Well, similar to that, we have the same issues here with the ICT, the 508 and 255. We find that technology has changed dramatically over the years, and of course, when the 508 and 255 were first published, it did not keep up with that technology. It wasn't, sometimes didn't even include some of the technology that we have out there today. So the purpose of this refresh was to go through that and try to write a standard and guideline that will be able to be used and applied to even changing technology as we go through the constant change of technology in our world today. At this time, we'll go through a little bit of the refresh steps. As most of you may know, that Section 255 guidelines were effective originally in 1998. And then the 508 standards were effective in 2001. We started our refresh process in 2006 and continued to 2008 with the TITAC committee. The TITAC stood for Telecommunications, Electronic, and Information Technology Advisory Committee. The TITAC spent, like I said, almost 2 years going through this report and made up of 43 members from industry, federal government, advocacy groups, and whatever, that total involvement there. The TITAC then completed their report and submitted it to the full Access Board in April of 2008. And with that, the board developed or created the ICT Ad Hoc Committee, which was made up again of the board members and also some of the federal agency staff that may be affected by the 508 and 255 refresh. Of course, that committee convened, and we spent until March of this year, last month, developing the draft text, and then of course that's when we released the advance notice of public rulemaking in March of 2010. At this time, the advance notice of public rulemaking is in public comment period for 90 days, and that public comment period is open until June 21st of this year. Once the comment period is over, the ICT Ad Hoc Committee will reconvene with staff and will go through those comments and make any changes to the text that we seem that's what needs to be made. And then we'll be releasing a new notice of proposed rulemaking. And there will be another public comment period during that time as well, again, for people to make comments. Again, once that closes, we'll go into the final rule, and then it will be published. At this time, I'll turn it over to Ron Gardner.
Okay, Neil, thank you very much. Again, my name is Ron Gardner from Salt Lake City. I'm a public board member. And what I get to do is really kind of review some of the stuff that Neil talked about. Neil had the pleasure of going through several slides, and I'm going to focus on one slide. It's called ANPRM and Draft Text. And we're going to talk about those in two sections. First of all is the ANPRM, which is one document. It's a separate and standalone document. And the second document we're going to talk about is the draft text itself. So let's first start with the ANPRM. First of all, before regulations can have the force and effect of law, they have to go through certain processes. And so the first step of this process then, to make it have the official and effect and force of law, is if there is a notice, an official notice given, and it's given in the Federal Register. And what that does is give everybody an equal opportunity to look at the draft, to look at the language, and to decide whether or not they have some input that they'd like to give. So this is the first step. This is an official notice. The notice has now been given, and that went out about a week ago. You all got that notice, or you wouldn't be on the webinar today. All right, well, we've got that one done. The ANPRM is a document that contains questions. I believe this one has 33 questions. Why, if we are proposing a regulation, are we asking questions? And it really is for a specific purpose. It's to guide your comments. It's to guide your thinking, not necessarily your thinking, but your input. If you have questions that you want to ask, if you have input you want to give, find one of those questions that it relates to. In other words, as you read through the questions in the ANPRM, the Advanced Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, that's what ANPRM is. As you go through those questions, kind of find the one that fits the item or the comment or the question that you have for the proposed regulation itself. Those questions are simply to help us categorize and put the input that we receive in the proper place. Does it matter if you miss it? Does it matter if you don't put it in the right place? No, we'll still get the comment, but it's simply an organizational tool that allows us to take the comments and to take the questions and to take the information that is being shared with us as we make this proposed new regulation and use it in the best and most efficient way. Well, the next item is a 90-day public comment period. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. But remember that it does end. 90 days does have an end. It'll be over June 21st. So now's the time to make the comment, and it's also the time to go out and get those other folks at work or other acquaintances that you have, other people that are interested in Section 508, Section 255, and the ADA, and make those comments now before June 21st. There are three subject matter items that we're dealing with. We call this the 508 refresh, but there really are three parts to it. We want to bring that to your attention. And Tim Cregan on our staff is going to highlight these as he goes through the actual test of the draft regulation. The three subject matter items are Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Section 508 first came into existence and had the effect and the force of law in 1998. So we've been with it for a while. We've given it a good test. Technology has changed. We all have some successes and some failures. But the fact is the regulations need to be refreshed. And so that's what we're doing is Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act. The next subject matter that we're dealing with in this rulemaking procedure, then, is Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act. That section is dealt with in the proposal, and you'll have the opportunity to look at the things that we're proposing there, ask questions, make comments, and help us out with your information there. And the last one, of course, is a specific part of the Americans with Disabilities Act guidelines, or the ADAGs. The last time they were amended was in 2004, and this is a very very precise and a very minimal proposal that we're making to the guidelines there, the ADAGs, which are the guidelines under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And it deals specifically with self-service machines. Another way of thinking of those are ATMs or kiosks or point-of-sale machines, the thing you slide your credit card through as you go through the grocery store or other commercial location, and you have to slide your credit card or debit card through, the point-of-sale machines, any other self-service machine. So far what I've been talking about is the first document. It's a standalone document, and it is the Advanced Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. Read through that, read the questions, and categorize your comments and questions according to the questions that are included in that document. The second document, then, is not more important, but it is the item that Tim is going to spend a good amount of time on today, and that is the regulation itself, the proposed or draft regulation. Because this is an advanced notice of proposed rulemaking, we're calling this a draft. It is a draft because even if it was passed in with no comment today, it would still go through an additional public comment period. So this is draft text. We want to make sure that everybody understands that it's draft. It is a draft only. And the draft will be amended based on public comments. So the comments that you all dream up or come up with as you read through this document are going to have bearing and weight and cause changes to happen to the draft text. So, again, today we have two documents, the ANPRM and the draft text. If you'll think about them as separate documents, I think it'll help as you go through really the seminar, the webinar this afternoon. Tim is going to be talking about, again, the ANPRM. There are questions in that, and then the regulation itself, or the draft regulation, is contained in that second document. All right, I spent quite a bit of time on that one slide, but if you'll think about it in those terms, I think it'll help with the rest of the webinar. At this point, then, what I'll do is turn it over to Tim Cregan, a staff member here at the U.S. Access Board.
Tim Cregan, U.S. Access Board staff member. As I just said, just in case this didn't pick up, that was Ron and Neil, Access Board public members, who were giving an overview to the entire two documents you have before you today. They've now passed it off to me, Tim Cregan. I'm an Access Board staff member. I'm a senior accessibility specialist. I was the designated federal officer for the TITAC committee, and I am the staff lead on the 508 refresh. I am here today to talk about the overview of the text document. When you print these out, you'll see that the ANPRM, the Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, which contains the 33 questions, is approximately 25 pages. The text is approximately 100 pages. So what I'm going to do today is give you an overview or a survey of the 125 pages of material. I am trying to be both comprehensive and, where called for, I will go into detail. I don't want to go into too much detail because I figure that you will be doing that yourself offline when you're reading this closely to come up with your own questions and comments. When we look at this first slide called Overview of the Text, the way this document is organized, there are two chapters one. And you may be asking yourself, well, why is that? And the reason there are two chapters one, we've borrowed this formatting from the formatting for the ADAG, ABAG, accessibility guidelines, because there are two different laws in that case, the Architectural Barriers Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. In a similar fashion, here we have a document which contains two different laws, Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, as Ron and Neil have said, and Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act. So each of the chapters one set out what are the specific parameters of that particular law. So as we know, Section 508, the standard of review is whether you must do something unless it would be an undue burden to comply with the requirements. Under Section 255, you must comply with it as long as it is readily achievable. Each of the chapters has a prefix. Section 508, it's all the provisions are preceded by an E for electronic. And in the 255, Chapter 1, all the provisions are preceded by a C for communications. And so when someone knows when they're referring to something, they know which law they're referring to. Chapter 2 is functional performance criteria, which is applied to both laws, given the coverage and scoping in Chapter 1. Chapters 3 through 9 are the technical provisions. Again, they're applied to both laws, and they're applied consistent with the scoping requirements listed in the Chapters 1 for that particular law. Chapter 10, documentation and support, applies to both laws, again consistent with the scoping for that law. Finally, we have the Americans with Disabilities Act amendments. Just to clarify a comment that Ron made, what this is currently we have provisions in the Americans with Disabilities Act that address automatic teller machines and fare machines. So it would be the banking machines and the fare machines. Those provisions are unchanged. There has been no change to the provisions for ATMs or fare machines. What is new and what has been added for this draft text only is a provision on self-service machines. And when we talk about self-service machine, the best example to think of is a self-ticketing machine, such as a kiosk that someone might use at an airport to print out their boarding pass or ticket for the airlines. So the only new thing for the Americans with Disabilities Act is the self-service ticketing provisions. Now what I'd like...
Tim, we've lost you. You're not, no hearing, you're speaking, but we've lost you. So can you please pick up the microphone again and start where you, we lost you when you switched the slides.
That's fine. Okay, this is Tim Cregan. I've just switched one slide. I've moved on to a slide that says Chapters, Draft. And on this slide, we have Chapters 1 through 6. What I will do, going through this material, is I will read off the name of the chapter, and for those chapters where we made particular changes or they're particularly significantly different from the current 508 standards, I will point that out. For those of you who can pick this up, those particular chapter names are underlined. To begin, Chapter 1, Section 508, and Chapter 1 for 255. Those are the two separate chapters, ones for each of the two laws. Section Chapter 2 is functional performance criteria. Chapter 3 is common functionality. Chapter 3 is a completely new area, and it is based on those common features that are common to all ICT products. We added this division at the suggestion of the TITAC, and we welcome public comment on that. It's one of our questions in the AMPRM when we generally ask questions about the organization. Chapter 4 is platforms, applications, and interactive content. This is what you think of in the current standards. You think of 1194, 21, and 22 about web, software, internet, and so forth. Chapter 5 is new, completely new. It's a chapter on electronic documents. In this case, we're trying to spell out with specificity what are the documents, what is the type of content that is covered, with as much detail as we could. We welcome your comments as to whether or not this is a good division of chapters between Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. Chapter 6 is synchronized media content and players, and what that goes to is those players which generate what we call synchronized media, which is currently known as multimedia. Moving sound, moving pictures, and sound. Okay, I'm moving on to the...
Tim, we lost you again.
This is Tim Cregan. What I've noticed is when I advance the slide, the automatic lock on the microphone goes off. So bear in mind, every time the slide advances, there'll be a slight pause before my voice comes back on. So don't worry, I'm aware of it, and I will be talking. The remaining chapters are Chapter 7, which is hardware aspects of ICT. Chapter 8, which is audio output from hardware. This is a completely new chapter. What this goes to is the TITAC recommended that we distinguish between conversation functionality of ICT, whether that conversational functionality is spoken or textual, as opposed to any sound output that's made by devices. Okay, so Chapter 8, audio output from hardware would be any sound that any device puts out. Chapter 9 is conversation functionality and controls. That addresses both real-time text as well as what's known as two-way simultaneous voice conversation. Finally, we have Chapter 10, which is ICT support documentation and ICT support services, and then the ADA amendments. All right. Finally, under the Americans with Disabilities Act amendments, we have provision 220 for automatic teller machines, fare machines, and self-service machines. As I mentioned a moment ago, the changes are that we have added provisions on self-service machines. All right. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to integrate the questions from the ANPRM with the material on the chapters. The questions in the ANPRM are organized into two types. There are questions generally about the entire document, which is what I will cover now, and then there are questions specific to each chapter. In addition, before this program started, you were all invited to send questions online. As of this morning, we received about 19 questions online. I've looked through them, and I'm going to integrate them with the questions that I'm responding to in this presentation. So we have, again, the questions, the overall questions about the entire document, questions specific to chapters 1 to 10, and questions about the ADA amendments. All right, first question, ANPRM questions overall, question 1. This draft is organized by product features or capabilities rather than by types of products. Those of you who are familiar with the current 508 know that it's organized according to what the item or product is. Is it software? Is it an application? Is it hardware? Is it a desktop? Is it a telephone? Is it a computer? Okay, that is, as my children would say, so last century. What we're focusing on now with the recommendation of the TITAC is, what are the features that we're trying to make accessible? So I've made a little in and out list on the slide. In the in column is what the text is proposing, and the out column is the old way of thinking about it. They're the same concepts, we're just addressing them differently. So now, in, we're talking about volume control. What's out is to talk about telephones. Because the device could have volume control, but it could also have texting capability. It could also have web surfing capability. It could have a lot of different features more than just a telephone. So it doesn't make sense to call it a telephone if it's more than that. So instead, we're talking about the feature we're trying to address, which in this case would be volume control. Similarly, nowadays we talk about reach ranges. How high, how far, from which direction do you try to approach or touch the ICT? This is distinguished instead of calling something, you know, just a copy machine. The reason for that is because nowadays we're going to be addressing more built-in devices, particularly under the ADA, than just copy machines. Finally, the idea of navigation, you know, going around a web page. Again, that's a feature. Can you navigate through a web page? As opposed to talking about internet or intranet applications. So the first question is, this is a good way to organize the document. Does this work for people? Is this usable? Okay, moving on. Second question, and this is really more for the federal folks out there, but we invite members of the public to weigh in on this as well. Should some of the provisions have differing implementation dates? What that means is, Ron talked about how the law became effective in 2001 under Section 508. Well, the law was published in the Federal Register the previous December, and then it became effective 6 months later in June of 2001. The reason for that was because agencies needed time to change their programs, and they needed time in order to implement the systemic changes in order to implement the new standards. So similarly, we're asking the same question in this case. Should some of these provisions have differing implementation dates? We invite your comments on that. Question three, overall format. Provisions with advisory. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to read the text of a provision. This is just a sample provision that I picked out of the draft text with a sample advisory. I'm going to read the whole thing just to illustrate the point. Okay, the numbering on this is E, so we know this is in Chapter 1, 508, E for electronic. 103.3.1.2, medium. This part applies to federal electronic content regardless of medium. That's the provision. Then with it we have an associated advisory. Advisory E103.3.1.2, medium. Electronic documents, for example, are covered regardless of whether posted on a website, attached to an email, or saved on a CD, flash drive, office server, or other medium. So, this way of doing business, this idea of having a provision with an associated advisory right next to it, this is new. We did not do this in the prior 508 or 255 standards or guidelines. We invite your comment. Is this a good idea? Does this work well for you? Or is there a better way to do this? Moving on to the next question in the AMPRM. Question four. The organization. I mentioned that we had 10 chapters, and we have Chapter 4, which is essentially software, and Chapter 5, which is electronic documents. Does it make sense to separate those two documents? Similarly, does it make sense to combine all requirements for audio output, including conversation functionality and status indicator sounds, into Chapter 8? And text messaging capability from Chapter 9 into one chapter. Currently, Chapter 8 is audio output and status indicator sounds, whereas Chapter 9 would be conversation functionality and text messaging. Does it make sense to separate them like that, or should we combine them? That's what we'd welcome your input on. Okay, now what I'd like to do is I would like to address some of the questions from the webinar which were on the list. And I'll just do this very quickly. One of the questions was, question 4 on your list of 19. These are not written down, and I'm reading them aloud. What is the word from the evaluation software vendors on their timeline for supporting testing against the new rules? That's a good question. We do not know because we have not heard from the evaluation software vendors, and so they will let us know, I am sure, by filing comments, which can be filed at www.regulations.gov. The next question, will this webinar be recast at some point? As I understand it, the policy is the webinar will not be recast, but it will be archived. So an accessible version of this will be archived online, so you will be able to both hear and see what is taking place today. Next question, how long will the proposed notice of rulemaking be open? The notice of proposed rulemaking, I will answer that question as how long will the comment period be open? The comment period will be open for 90 days. It opened March 22nd, which was last Monday, and it will close on June 21st, which is the first day of summer. So you have a great deal of time left to get it in, and since it can be filed electronically, you could literally file it at the last minute. The typical turnaround for changes to become law, the question there is, under the Administrative Procedure Act, which governs the timing for rulemakings, rulemaking is a time-intensive process because it is intended to be as open as possible and allow as many people to participate in the process as possible. In addition to that, there are several required review periods, such as, for example, when a draft or notice of proposed rulemaking goes to the Office of Management and Budget, there's a minimum 90-day review period. The OMB gets to review the materials. They may ask for more time if they need it. Comment periods may vary anywhere from 60 to 90 days. And again, the time to review and collate and edits based on those comments may vary. So it's very hard to say a specific time or date. As we said, we've given the next steps in the process. We've not given specific dates because a number of the items are out of our control. For instance, if in this particular comment period we would receive thousands of comments, it would take us that much longer to review the material because we would want to make sure that all the comments were reviewed and were addressed appropriately in the revised text. Then the final question was, when the review becomes law, how long will federal agencies have to comply? Again, that goes to the question of implementation, which was one of the questions I asked on the slide. How long will federal agencies have to comply with it? And that is something that we are asking, particularly from federal agencies, if they will need more time to address any of these provisions. Next question was, will there be a mapping between the current law, you know, the 1194.21 and so forth, and the proposed new regulations? And the answer to that is yes, that will happen, but it will not happen probably until the notice of proposed rulemaking stage, because we're this is too preliminary at this point because it's considered draft text. All right. Next question, when can we expect documentation and training information on the new material to be updated? Well, again, the material will be updated once we have a new rule, and that is not going to happen for at least a couple of years at this point. Okay, let's see, there's just a few more questions about process chapters. How can we keep track of any changes to the proposed refresh between what is currently posted now and this becoming approved law? My recommendation on that is to go to the Access Board website and sign up for the automatic updates. You will automatically be sent an email every time the update page is refreshed, and the address for that is on our Access Board webpage, and the address is www.access-board.gov/508.htm. And then finally, there's a question here about how this relates to the United Nations Commission on the Rights of People with Disabilities. I will address that at the end of the presentation. Let me just say very briefly is that the United States is a signatory to that agreement, but the question was going to what is the United States doing to address accessibility? Historically, the United States has addressed accessibility in the built environment, in the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Architectural Barriers Act, captioning requirements that are promulgated by the FCC, and in the current Section 508, we address information and communications technology accessibility, and also under Section 255. All right, that addresses the general questions that we had before we get into the substance of particular provisions. So what I'd like to do now is I'm going to go through the chapters 1 through 10 of the draft. Chapters 1 through 10 of the draft. I had hoped to be able to take a break right around now, but I think that because of the fluid nature of the discussion, I think what I'll do is I'll continue through and we'll save our questions for the end, which will probably be about 10 or 15 minutes from the hour, because right now it's 3:15 Eastern Time and we're going till 4 p.m. All right, Section 508, Chapter 1, Application and Administration. All right, what I'm going to do for each of these chapters is I'm going to go through, this is the outline of each chapter. I will not necessarily go into a specific question about that chapter, except to address questions which were raised in the ANPRM and also raised by the audience out here, which questions I have in front of me. And I will repeat the questions that were given to me. Okay, Chapter 508, Chapter 1. All of the chapters are set up, so the first provision in the chapter is always a purpose provision. In this case, because it's 508, because it's the application and administration chapter, the prefix is always going to be E for electronic. This is the only chapter that has the E prefix, and it goes from E101 purpose down through E112 reference standards and guidelines. So 101 is E purpose, E102 is general requirements, E103 is the application. The application is a new provision in which we explicitly state to whom the Section 508 law applies, and it applies to agencies as defined in the U.S. Code, and you will see that in the draft text. Section 104, undue burden, is identical in the current standards and guidelines. Section 105 is the provision on general exceptions. That has some changes in it, which we discuss in the ANPRM. E106 is equivalent facilitation, which is unchanged from the current standards and guidelines. E107, completely new provision, and it was put here at the recommendation of the TITAC committee. It is WCAG 2.0 harmonization. The committee felt that it was very important in view of the ongoing worldwide efforts to promote accessibility for ICT, that the Access Board attempt to harmonize whenever possible with recognized standards and guidelines. And so this is our attempt to address harmonization with WCAG 2.0. I invite all of you to look at this with particularity and to comment on it. The particular chapters that are involved would be specifically Chapter 4, Chapter 5, and Chapter 6. But the language that says how the harmonization occurs is in Chapter 1 for 508, and you'll also see it in Chapter 1 for 255. Going on, Provision E108, Best Meets, the language is unchanged from the current standards and guidelines. E109, Provision of Support Services and Materials, is essentially unchanged. E110 is Conventions. That is a statement that we put in Application Administration chapters, and what it does is it addresses such drafting conventions as the singular includes the plural, the male includes the female, etc. Definitions, E111, definitions. We have significant changes in the definitions of the words for ICT, and we invite you to comment on that. Finally, E112, we have reference standards and guidelines, which is a new thing where we reference particular standards and guidelines. All right, now for Chapter 255, Chapter 1, I've moved on to the next slide. This is very similar to what you've just seen, so I'm going to kind of speed things up a little bit because I know we have a lot of material we want to cover. C, again, the prefix in this chapter is C for communications. This is the only chapter where that C prefix occurs because it's the only chapter that refers to the 255 law. So if you're looking at a device where the 255 law applies, you would first go to this chapter and say, okay, what are the requirements under the law that I have to follow for 255? And then you look at the technical provisions and interpret them through this first chapter. So C101 is purpose. 102 is general requirements, again, not changed. C103, application, again, we made some changes there, so I invite you to look. C-104, information, documentation, and training is essentially unchanged. C-105, equivalent facilitation, essentially unchanged. C-106, WCAG 2.0 harmonization, that's the new provision that we had talked about. And then C-107, product design, development, evaluation, that is changed somewhat from the current law. We ask you to take a look at that. 108, conventions, like I said before, that is the singular encompasses the plural, the masculine includes the feminine, and so forth. C-109, definitions. One definition that is now in this chapter, which was not in the current law, is the definition of interconnected voice over internet protocol. It's an example of a new technology which was not in existence at the time of the original standards, and we've now defined it based on the FCC definition, which we have incorporated. So we'd ask you to look and comment on that. And then finally, chapter C-110, reference standards and guidelines. Okay. Okay, now we're on to chapter 2, which is functional performance criteria. Before we, what I'm doing is I'm giving the overview of the chapters, and then I go to the questions. So chapter 2 is functional performance criteria, 201 is general, and then 202 is functional performance criteria, which we have changed. And I will mention some of those changes in the questions. Moving on, we have chapter 3, which is common functionality. As I said before, this is a completely new chapter, based on the recommendation of the TITAC committee, because this is the way we're grouping those provisions which are common to all ICT. As always, the first provision is 301, it's general. Second provision is closed functionality. We've made some significant changes to that. Closed functionality no longer includes just the concept of a device such as a kiosk or, say, a small handheld calculator to which you cannot add assistive technology. It may also include ICT, which has closed functionality due to policy reasons. For example, a system may be in lockdown due to security requirements. So we address that in those provisions, and we ask you to take a look. Similarly, Section 303 on biometrics has been changed. Section 304, preservation of information required for accessibility. These are new provisions, and we ask that you look at them with particularity in the ANPRM. Section 305 in color is very similar to what's in the current standard, as is the provision on flashing, 306. Finally, the Section 307, operable parts, has been changed, and that is in response to the TITAC, which recommended that we use language from the current ADAG, particularly in regard to reach ranges. The current 508 standards only talk about reach ranges from a side approach, the most common scenario being someone in a wheelchair trying to come up to and approach a freestanding copy machine. In the new standards, we are including not only side approaches, but we are also including front approaches. The reason for that is because we are cognizant that technology has changed, and sometimes people are approaching devices or ICT from the front as well as the side. And that was based on the recommendation of the TITAC. So we ask you to take a look at that and see if that is adequate. Okay, now I would like to get to the questions. All right. First question 5. The question of coverage of content. This is a very big provision, and this deserves a significant amount of your time. If you answer no other question in the ANPRM, I personally would ask that you look at question 5. The definition of covered content is, quote, official communications by federal agencies. That's what the internal committee reviewed that we adopt as language. And we would ask for your comment, what does that mean? I would say one of the questions we got in beforehand from your audience, the question said, how does this E-103 apply to routine communications such as emails or documents exchanged between individuals or specific groups of federal employees? That is an excellent question. And the short answer is, we don't know. I would ask you to think about this because the way this is defined could open up a huge, huge area of coverage. Similarly, the language as written does not really address other types of communication, such as social media. Some agencies provide social media, examples Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, so forth. Question is, how do we handle attachments? And finally, we would welcome your comments on what is this going to cost? Because these are all very important considerations. Okay, moving on. The National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, which is responsible for keeping the nation's records, is prohibited from altering archival records. Those are records that are sent to NARA to be preserved in perpetuity. An example shown on the slide is a picture of the Declaration of Independence in all its flowing script. Certainly, NARA cannot, you know, retype that and save the retyped copy and say that's the Declaration of Independence, because it's not. So there is an exception in the provisions for that. But the question is, should requests for information from NARA be treated differently? Should they have other exceptions which will allow them to not make materials accessible? So we're asking for comment on that provision. Thank you. All right, moving on, question 6. Again, this is chapter 1. There's a question about removing 3 exemptions. And this is discussed in more detail in the ANPRM. One exception was that assistive technology is not needed at all federal workstations. We're considering removing it because there is no requirement anywhere that AT be required at all federal workstations. In other words, if I do not have a visual disability, my workstation need not have JAWS, for example, software loaded on it. There's no requirement for that, so why do I need to put it in an exception? So we're considering removing that exception. We welcome public comment on that. Secondly, accessible ITT need only be provided to the public at public locations. There's no requirement for that, so we're considering removing that exemption. We welcome comment on that. Finally, the somewhat misnamed back office exemption. It's really for maintenance spaces used only by service personnel for maintenance and repair. We had a great deal of discussion about this in the TITAC. The example that was given to us was, what if you have a natural disaster? And so an agency has to bring in a tractor trailer full of telecommunications equipment to get the infrastructure back and running in an affected area. They're going to be running cables from that tractor trailer out to the workstation, because they're not going to expect anybody really to go into the tractor trailer, because it's so jammed full of technology, they don't expect people to go into that space. So our point was, okay, well, if maintenance spaces can be accessed remotely, why would we need an exception for this? So again, we welcome your comment on this issue. All right, continuing with the questions, what about harmonization with WCAG 2.0? Are there suggestions for alternative methods to approaching this? And what are the benefits and costs associated with harmonizing with WCAG 2.0? We have our next question has to do with the definition of information and communications technology. Essentially, what we've done is we've referenced our current standard on electronic and information technology and added to it. There's images on the slide of different types of technology, texting devices, interactive voice response systems, software systems, office products, laptops, kiosks, and so forth. We invite you to look at the definition of ICT and give us your comments on that. Question 9, definition of interconnected voice over internet protocol, VoIP service. This definition is taken directly from the Federal Communications Regulations, but again, we welcome your comment on that. Moving on, question 10, how the functional performance criteria and the technical provisions are used to make sure that ICT is accessible. Provisions E103.5 and C103.6 make explicit that when you meet the technical criteria, you're deemed to meet the functional performance criteria. So we welcome your comments on that. This is not a new position. This is just an explicit statement of what's already contained in technical assistance, but we welcome your comments on that. Moving on, question 11, chapter 2, functional performance criteria, 202.3, with limited vision. We changed the visual acuity requirement from 20 over 70 to 20 over 200. Will this change improve access for people with limited vision? What are the benefits and costs associated with this provision? Again, for all of these provisions, we invite your comments, particularly as to the benefits and costs associated with it. Moving on, question 12, perception of color, 202.4. This was added to the functional performance criteria so that the functional performance criteria would track or have parallels in the technical requirements, because we were intending consciously to have a mapping between functional performance criteria and technical provisions. Is this a useful provision? What are the benefits and costs associated with it? Question 13, for persons with limited hearing, 202.6. We added some specificities as to how you can comply with functional performance criteria for persons with limited hearing. We listed a number of features that could be addressed to improve the hearing experience. And those are clarity, reduction of background noise, control of background noise. What are the benefits and costs associated with this? Is this a good approach? We welcome your comments. Moving on, question 14, without physical contact. This is the issue of someone is operating a device or operating ICT without making contact. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of a soft, fuzzy Mr. Bluetooth. I thought you could all use a little humor at this point in the process. And the picture below that is the movie star Tom Cruise in the movie Minority Report. He's wearing these really cool gloves with sensors in them, and what he's doing is he's making gesture interfaces in the air to operate technology. So, all humor aside, this is an increasing use of technology, and we ask for your comments on this, and what are the benefits and costs associated with it? Question 15. Are cognitive disabilities sufficiently addressed in the functional performance criteria? Cognitive disabilities was a very large area. The committee heard information and testimony on it. The internal committee debated it. We had a very, very hard time coming up with language to address this. We tried to address it in the provisions we have, and we would welcome public comment on how we could do this better. So we appreciate your comments on that. Question 16. The board is interested in comments on how closed functionality is covered in the draft. Should other means of assistive technology besides personal headsets be permitted to provide access to ICT with closed functionality? We welcome your comments on that. Before I get into Chapter 4, what I'd like to do is just go through some of the questions that we received ahead of time about different provisions in Chapters 1 through 3. I've already talked about the question about routine communications. What it says, there was a question here that says, it's talking about advisory to E103.4.1, pre-existing ICT, and says, will any change or addition to pre-existing ICT require the entire website or application to conform to the new rule? And that is addressed in that advisory. Essentially what it goes to is how old is the application you're patching? How significant would the change be? Would it rise to the level of an undue burden? So the question is, it depends on when the change is made. Moving on, will the new rule apply to contractor-furnished equipment and electronic content that's created or used exclusively off-site on federal contracts? Well, this goes to provision 103.4.2, which is the federal contracts exception. What this really goes down to, are you talking about ICT that's being provided as part of the contract? In other words, is this part of the deliverable? So if it's part of the deliverable, it has to be made accessible. If it's not part of the deliverable and it's just being used by the contractor to produce the deliverable, it itself does not need to be made accessible. Okay, moving on to the questions. Question was, going to Chapter 1, they're asking about PDFs, and it says, would PDF print versions of accessible web content have to also be accessible as electronic content under the new rules? Now, this question was a little ambiguous, but what I read it two ways. One is, if you're talking about accessible web content and you have to print out the paper copy, well, the paper copy is not going to be accessible when you print it out. But that's okay as long as you have an accessible HTML version or other accessible format available on the page. This may be a provision that we need to look at further, but we welcome a comment on that. Finally, question on section E103.4, which mentions maintenance. It says, must a hardware product be able to be serviced without vision with unlimited manipulation, etc.? And the answer to that is no, because our standards don't talk about maintenance, because they talk about it's not considered part of the routine operation of the product. So for the example that's used in our technical assistance is when we talk about changing paper trays and copiers. That is not covered and does not need to be made accessible. What does need to be covered is being able to navigate the menu of the copier, because that is integral to the operation of the device. But the fact that you're maintaining it and adding paper and so forth, that is not covered. So the answer in this question is, no, the hardware does not have to be serviced with limited manipulation and so forth. Okay, now we're back to Chapter 4, which is platforms, applications, and interactive content. Remember, this is one of the chapters where we ask early on, should it be combined with Chapter 5 or not. Again, we have provision 401, which is general, provision 402, which is non-text content, provision 403, which is distinguishable content, which is a new provision, and it's taken straight from the TITAC report. Provision 404 goes to keyboard operation, which is in the current standard and guideline. Provision 5, which goes to time limits, again, which is new. Provision 406, navigation. Provision 407, predictability. Provision 408, which is input assistance, which contains a number of new features. Provision 409, user preferences, again, is new. Particularly significant new provisions would be chapters provision 410, which addresses interoperability with assistive technology. This is all new, but it addresses a number of concerns that have been in these standards since the beginning. And it's based on the TITAC recommendations, but the Access Board implemented some of the provisions in here, and so we would welcome your comments. Similarly, the section 411 on compatible technologies would welcome your comments. 412, assistive technology functions. Again, that's new, as well as the provision on authoring tools. These provisions have all been put in because the intent is that we create accessible content and we make more accessible ICT available. Chapter 5, electronic documents. Again, it's very similar. You have a 501, which is the general provision, section 502, which is non-text content, section 503, which is adaptable presentation of content, section 504, distinguishable presentation of text content, section 505, navigation and orientation, section 506, readability, section 507, input assistant, and section 508, compatible technologies. Moving on. We have Chapter 6, which is synchronized media content and players. What this goes to is what you think of those that ICT technology, which will play what we think of as synchronized media or multimedia, as it's formally known. Chapter 601 is general. Again, the first provision is always general. 602 is video or audio content with interactive elements. 603 is captions and transcripts for audio content. 604 is video description and transcript for video content. 605, caption processing technology. This is a new provision and has not been addressed before. 606, video description processing technology. We welcome your comments on that. 607, user controls for captions and video description. And 608, audio track and volume control. New provisions. Okay. I'm just going to take one brief break here for about 10 seconds. I'll be right back.
Our speaker will be with us back in a second here. He just was stepping away, I think, and he'll be back shortly, so please hang on with us, and we'll be back up and running soon. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. This is Tim. I'm back. What I was doing was I stepped away is because I'm in the interest of time. I'm keeping a close watch on the time here. What we're going to do is I want to make sure that we address the questions you submitted before the presentation started. So what we're going to do is everyone is going to be getting a copy of the presentation with the slides in it. And it has the questions in it from the AMPRM. What we've done, as you'll see, is we've boiled down the AMPRM question to its essence. And in addition, my email address is included there, so people can send me if they have specific email questions. What I'd like to do now is I want to make sure. Okay. What I want to do is I want to make sure that I address the questions that were put for these provisions. So what I'd like to do is talk about provisions for Chapter 4, which is where the questions pick up. All right. The question that was asked. Chapter 4. What it says is, what is the best way for assisted technology to indicate an error condition has occurred when using an online application? What is the best way for assisted technology to indicate an error condition has occurred when using an online application? Okay, the short answer for that is, our standards do not tell either assistive technology or software vendors how to handle errors. The only provision that's in there that addresses this is section 408.2, which is the advisory, which goes to error, input error identification and description. 408.2, input error identification and description, and it says that the best practice is for the error identification and description to be as specific as possible, and that you should provide a text, or you should describe the problem to the user in text. Otherwise, AT doesn't typically tell you what the mistakes are, and so I'm moving on to the next question. These are questions for Chapter 5. Yeah, the questions are on the screen. What you see is, again, the questions from the AMPRM, which are pretty much self-explanatory. The next question that was given to me was a question about what are the guidelines to follow when coding web pages in HTML and cascading style sheets to ensure that they're compliant with Section 508. What tags should be used? What should be avoided? Now, this is an excellent question because it not only allows me to reference the standards, but it also allows me to illustrate how harmonization with WCAG would work in this case. So what you would do, first of all, is you would look at the WCAG 2.0 quick reference at the WCAG quick reference link. And I will state the links and these will be available. http://www.w3.org/WAI WCAG 2.0 quick ref. And when you do that, what you get is a document that comes up that's called an information implementation summary, and it contains conformance levels. WCAG 2.0, as you know, has three conformance levels, A, AA, and AAA. 508 conformance harmonization requires WCAG AA conformance. So what you would do, a user would go to this web page, they would click on the conformance level AA on the chart, and what that will do is that will generate a list of provisions that apply. So it boils it down and it gives you a list of websites that meet this provision. And what this does, you can take the on this web page there is a link that says customize this quick reference. And what you do is you click on the provisions for the technologies you want. And the link for this is quick ref overview. What I just talked about was the report for websites. To address the questions of which provisions to use, you click on, there's a link that says show CSS techniques and failures, show the level A and AA success criteria, and what it does is it gives you, in this particular instance, some 38 pages of WCAG 2.0 criteria which are helpful in addressing those provisions. So again, this is helpful because what we're saying in this draft is you can use the WCAG materials to meet 508 conformance. And we invite all of you to submit comments as to how useful you find this requirement and how useful you find this provision. Moving on to the next question. Again, these are questions that were submitted beforehand. The question was, what colors for text and background should be avoided on web pages because of the various types of color blindness? Again, you're not looking so much at the colors, but you're looking at the contrast. So what you want to do is you want to use high contrast. So what you want to do is you want to look at Chapter 5, and the provision you want is provision 504.2.2, text contrast ratios. 504.2.2, text contrast ratios, and those are based on the WCAG 2.0 definitions, which are found at the WCAG web link, which is given in that advisory. And let me see, for the last question for Chapter 5 that we got ahead of time was, can we speak to the new contrast ratio and how this can be taught to designers? Well, the best way to do that is to go to the WCAG 2.0 success criteria 1.4.3. Again, this is all seen in Chapter 5. You go to the WCAG link, you go to the WCAG 2.0 success criteria 1.4.3, and you go down several levels. You look for the success criteria, and then you look for the how to meet and understanding links. You click on those, and it will give you a wealth of resources to answer your question. Okay, those are the questions for Chapter 5. And then we had a final question. It's actually taken from Chapter 7. They said they weren't clear about what there were specific considerations for the concept of freestanding versus building kiosk. What are the differences between the two? And it's essentially the same thing. Again, as I talked about before, because we're looking at technology which can be approached from the front as well as from the side, we are using the current ABA provisions describing reach ranges and devices. So that is what you would look to in that case. Okay, in the interest of time, it's now 4:15. What I'm going to do is I have a slide up that talks about how to submit comments. Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll cover this very quickly, and then if we have any questions that we can take in the remaining time, I'll be glad to do that. Again, my emphasis is on addressing those questions which were not already in the ANPRM. You can submit comments in four ways. You can go to the Federal Rulemaking Portal at http://www.regulations.gov. You can email to the ICT rule at access-board.gov, include the docket number 2010-1, or the RIN number, which is 3014-AA37, in the subject line of the message. You can fax it to 202-272-0081. Please, in the subject line of your fax, put the same docket number 2010-1 or RIN number 3014-AA37. Finally, you can hand, deliver, courier, or mail it to the Office of Technical and Information Services, U.S. Access Board, 1331 F Street, Northwest, Suite 1000, Washington, D.C., 2004-1111. Okay, I think we've covered the basics. We've covered an overview of the ANPRM and the draft text. And at this time, I'm showing a quarter till. What I'd like to do is just open this up to any questions that anyone would like to submit at this time. Thank you. I'm just waiting. Yes. So we're waiting for questions. Okay, I have a question here that was asking, what is the reference for the W3C for the quick reference? And I will give that again. This is in reference to a question about, you know, how do I know what to use? And the reference is http://, it's www.w3.org. /WAI/WCAG20, so WCAG20/ quick ref, QUICKREF /overview. Yeah, and someone has just posted it. It looks like Judy Brewer. Thank you, Judy. She's just posted it online. Next question. Question was whether there will be a second draft text. As we said before, what's going to happen procedurally is there's going to be, this is the advance notice of proposed rulemaking, ANPRM. After this, there's going to be an NPRM. But there's going to be a significant period of time between when this comment period closes and the NPRM comes out, because first of all, we have to address all the comments you've given us, and secondly, we have to develop a regulatory assessment where we do a cost-benefit analysis of the provisions. All right. Okay. This, again, the target date for official compliance would be sometime after the final rule is published. As I said, I can't really give you a time on that because we don't. There's a lot of elements under that that are not outside our control. Just to give you a general time frame, you're looking at least a year or more. And there would be plenty of announcement before that happens. But that is normal and typical with the federal rulemaking process. Okay, the example of without physical contact. That was, someone's asking what that means. Without physical contact means that the individual is not actually touching or impacting on the ICT. So, in other words, my hands would never touch a keyboard, for example. And you may remember on the slide, there was a slide where it was a picture of the actor Tom Cruise wearing some gloves and who is using gesture-based interface. So that's an example of without physical contact. Bluetooth would be an example of another type of technology. The question 24 in the pre-reb, there's a question regarding equipment facilitation via an IP. And I did not get, there's a reference to question 24 on the pre-webinar list. As I said, we stopped getting questions about 2 hours before, so I'm not sure what this is talking about. I will be looking at this, and I'll move on to the next provision while we're looking at link to the detailed proposed rules. The link to the detailed proposed rules is on the Access Board website, www.access.gov/508.htm. Yes. What we're going to do, I mean, the law is still going to be 508. This rulemaking is referred to, we're referring to it colloquially as the ICT rules, just to distinguish it from the current 508. One thing I want to emphasize is this is just draft text. This is not a new rule in any way, shape, or form, because this is draft only. Please do not get confused and think that these are new regulations, because they're not. Let's see. There's a question here where someone's asking whether the WCAG conformance guidelines apply to the current 508 requirements. As you may recall, the original 508 came out in 2001. At that time, WCAG had a version called WCAG 1.0. If you look at the current 508 standards, there is indeed a little chart that shows you what WCAG provisions from WCAG 1.0 apply. So the answer to your question is yes, the current 508 standards do comply with WCAG 1.0, but they're very specific as to which provisions apply. I would suggest you look at the chart. Thank you. Robin has just posted a link to the government, to the documents on their website. And let's see. I'm just looking to see if there are other questions. I'm trying to make sure that we get this, be responsive to your questions. Again, we're trying to be responsive as we can in the time we have allotted, so I'm welcoming any more questions that anyone wants to put in. I realize this is a lot of material. Okay. All right. There's a good question here. It says, is there any concern that the new method of organizing and the lack of specificity in some areas will lead to additional confusion over their implementations? The answer to your question is, we want to know what you think. We organize the materials in this way in part on recommendations from the TITAC, because, again, the TITAC said don't address products because the identifying something as a product is too limited. In this day and age, you're looking at features. So is this a good way to address features? So again, look at the questions on the AMPRM as to whether or not the features analysis works. Okay. Yes, the question was in the TITAC, they're asking about changes between the TITAC report and the current draft text. And the question they're looking at specifically was the minimum color contrast ratio was 5:1 in the draft rules, and now it's 4.5:1. The change was done to harmonize with WCAG 2.0. In many cases, we tried to harmonize with WCAG 2.0 as much as we could. So to answer your question, yes. When you read the AMPRM specifically flags those instances where we made changes from the current 508 or 255, and also in those instances where the board deviated from the TITAC recommendation. Okay. There's a question that just came in. It's providers of equipment to federal agencies are asked to provide self-assessments in VATS. I think you mean VPATS, Voluntary Product Accessibility Templates. Are there going to be additions to the guidelines to provide assistance in the assessments? Okay, this is a very good question. The agency that actually can address this issue, this is the question, is how are the VPATs going to change because of the proposed changes in the regulations? And the answer is yes, they will change. And the General Services Administration is currently working on some draft formats because they're working on developing an online tool which would address, incorporate the new proposed standards, and those would be used to generate an online VPAT. So the idea is to try and standardize the process. Also, separately, they're trying to distinguish between the idea of a VPAT, which was a voluntary product developed between government and industry, to something called a GPAT, which is a government product accessibility template. So I would keep watching the web pages, the Access Board, and the General Services Administration Section 508 web page for more information on those developments. And the Section 508 refresh, again, does specifically address Web 2.0 and rich web technologies. I would look at Chapters 4 and 5 for that. Again, we welcome your comment as to whether or not that this is a good way to divide up the material. So, And there's a follow-up question on the color contrast ratios. Again, what you should do is the draft provision, assuming that became the law, is what you would have to meet. What you can do is look at the corresponding WCAG provisions, and then you can look at the WCAG understanding and how to meet and understanding sections in order to make compliance with that. Again, that's the reason why we harmonized with WCAG, because we thought it was really important to build on the experience of those documents and to allow people to have the benefit of that information. Yes. I'm just looking through here real quickly to see if there's any other questions or comments. And we're also getting very close to the time, so I don't want to go over. Let's see. Yeah, someone has pointed out that the TITAC report, which is on the Access website. Okay, they're asking, okay, now I have a question for Chapter 6, which is real-time video, 604.4. It's the recommended technique for speakers to incorporate verbal descriptions of any visual information, that this practice may avoid having to add video description to presentations. When would you need to add a separate video description if a verbal description is already provided? Well, in general, what the rule is saying is you would have to add audio description, or as we call it, video description. What they're suggesting is that you can minimize the need for that if the content which the speakers are putting out helps everyone understand what's being said or what is being discussed. One of the things that we're particularly interested in, by the way, is there is no standard that we could find for video description. And one of the questions we're asking is are there any standards or guidelines which we could reference in this regard which would be helpful? So this is a very good question. These are very important issues. In many of these cases, we're trying to find the most authoritative, the best authority on the issue. And, you know, in some cases, we just didn't get the information or we found the best we could. Another provision had to do with real-time text and with SIP. And we specifically call that out in the AMPRM, where there's something called an RFC 4103, which we were unable to reference in our standards, in our draft text, because it's not considered a completed standard. So we welcome people's comments on that if there's anything else. Okay, that's a question about are simple animations covered under video in Chapter 6. Being careful not to be tripped up on what you mean by simple animation, but if it's video and it has no sound, yes, it would be covered. It's moving media. So the question is yes, it would be covered under the chapter 6, which is synchronized media. Then there's a question about webcams. Again, I'm assuming you're talking about webcam broadcast. Again, remember, every time we talk about these devices and technology, you're talking about it as used in a federal context, because that's where it applies. Okay, I'm now getting a bunch of very short questions. What about USB keys, external hard drives, other storage devices? I'm not sure what the question is there. Are they covered? I mean, if it meets the definition of ICT under the definition section, then it would be covered. And someone is asking a strategy question. Since it won't go into effect until a year or more, would you recommend making sure that we meet current guidelines and prepare to update when this becomes law? Or should we go ahead and do our best to meet the draft requirements now? Well, I guess my answer to that question would be yes, you should always try to meet the current guidelines, because those are the law of the land, and they've been the law for the last 9 years. I think to the extent that you follow what technology is doing and what it's developing, I think that, you know, increasing accessibility is always better. We don't know, sitting here today, what the final rule is going to look like, but we do know that we're going to try to be more inclusive and more accessible than we are now. So whatever you can do to make that work, I recommend strongly. Let's see. Now we have some comments here saying that the webinar is being recorded and will be archived. You also have my email. So again, I'm just trying to address those questions which are new. Okay. Again, this is my email. I've just posted this up for folks. And Again, my email is Cregan@access-board.gov, so I'll do my best to respond timely to any questions we get off after the presentation today ends. Okay. All right. I think we're about done. Robin, I'm just, you know, willing to sign off now because I know some people have to leave. I'll be, you know, but like I said, I'm willing to stay on as long as you have the webinar. Okay. I can answer any questions. Thank you. Should I unclick? Okay. I'm going to mute myself now, and I believe Robin is going to come in at this point. Thank you all, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you, everyone, for your patience during the webinar session today and sticking with us for the 90 minutes. Thank you to our speakers, Tim, Neil, and Ron, for presenting very valuable information. Obviously, everyone can understand the complexity of this particular issue, and that's probably why you joined the webinar in the first place, was to help you demystify it a little bit. Hopefully, this session and the questions and such assisted you in doing this. Also, hopefully you understood that the value of submitting your questions in advance to make sure that you had your and could get your questions responded to if you had something by looking at materials in advance, such as the notice of proposed rulemaking. We thank everyone for participating. Just to reiterate, this is being recorded. An archive is being prepared for this. It will be posted to the www.accessibilityonline.org website. Which will include the webinar itself. You can replay it, the copy of the presentation materials, et cetera. You also will be receiving an email at the conclusion if you are registered for this session with a copy of the materials as well as a link to the evaluation. We want your feedback and we value your feedback. The materials do have the information about how to submit comments. That was the second to last slide that was showing earlier, as well as Tim's email. And as you heard him, he encouraged you to send him questions directly regarding this information. So everyone have a great holiday. Thank you very much for your participation in the program. Our next session, if you could advance the slide one, please, Tim. Is next month on May 6, 2010. We're switching gears a little bit with the Access Board and focusing on accessible parking and passenger loading zones. More information on that session can be found on the website www.accessibilityonline.org. Again, thank you very much and have a great day. Bye. You can sign off by just